Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you, one and all, for being with us. It's always exciting to know there are actually people out there listening to us while we're having fun doing this. My guest tonight is Denise Minger, who, as we've been saying to each other, is just a kindred spirit. She's an expert in nutrition and also fascinated with, guess what? Spirituality, the paranormal, and metaphysics. So we're going to have some fun. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I'm a little, as we would say in the old neighborhood, fatutzed, because I'm going to a convention tomorrow. And I'm really happy to be going because it's been a couple of years with various health issues that since I've been able to speak at the American Society of Dowsers convention. And for those of you that are totally unfamiliar with dowsing, which I was actually right up until the day that I spoke at the convention, and I'll tell you that story, dowsing is usually generally known as a way to find water. That's the traditional way of somebody who is trained using a tool, usually that looks like a forked stick, and finding water. And believe it or not, they're more accurate than the hydrogeologists, and it's a whole lot cheaper and faster. And there are dowsers that specialize in finding all kinds of things. But dowsing is kind of being psychic for non-psychics. So if you don't have some extended sense, like seeing or hearing or feeling things as a way of getting information, that's not in the physical, that you can't feel with your five senses, then you can get similar information using a biofeedback tool, which will access the same part of your subconscious mind, which is accessing the information from whatever the universe is and however we get information from it. And most people that do dowsing do it with a pendulum. And my favorite joke, which I will tell many times at the convention, is I'm so glad to be here at the Swingers Convention. But there are many other tools that dowsers use for it. And basically, dowsing is a questioning technique. You have to ask the right question in such a way that you can get a yes or no answer. So this little swinging weighted object will swing in a different direction for yes and a different direction for no. And there are more sophisticated things you can do with it. But that's the essence of it, is getting yes or no answers to the questions that you ask. And I wasn't a dowser that I knew of, but in 1 week, two different people that I ran into who knew my work and were talking to me about my work said, "Oh, you should speak at the dowsing convention." I was like, "There's a dowsing convention? And what do they do?" When the second person said the same thing and gave me the name of somebody to call, I called and I told them the story. You know, I'm not a dowser. This is what I do. I do this kind of shamanic work. And these two people said that I'm supposed to be speaking at the dowsing convention. And I know the convention's a few days from now, and I know this is way out there, but I follow my intuition. And what do you think? And the person on the other end said, "Would you like one presentation or two?" So I was suddenly on the bill at the dowsing convention, and for several years, one of the things I did each time was a talk about ghosts entitled, "Is Everything You Know About Ghosts Dead Wrong?" Which is a wonderful conversation with my controversial and different take on what ghost phenomena is really about. And a room full of people that are interested in this stuff and know things. And we have a fascinating conversation. And my second talk at this convention is going to be about the method that I use when I have an intake conversation over the phone with people. And I can't go into a deep trance to look at things because I still want to be able to talk. So I came up with a method that is roughly what's called paper dowsing. So on a piece of paper, I put down various things which in effect are questions, even though it's one letter or one number that's sitting there as a placeholder for the question. And without having to ask the question or go through a whole lot of focus, I get answers to it. I get numbers. I get other stuff. So for the first time, I'm going to be teaching that method to these people who are dowsers, and I still don't consider myself a dowser. I use some dowsing methods, but, you know, that's not really the primary way that I work. If you've never met, well, when I first went to the convention, I didn't know what to expect. And when people think about spiritual conventions, you think of more, what's more common is a New Age gathering, and there's all kinds of people who are interested in different things, and many of them may be fairly flamboyant and dress differently, talk about things with jargon, all kinds of other stuff, have all kinds of gizmos and things that they want to tell you about. Most dowsers, you would never notice if you didn't, if they walk by you. They look like mechanics and housewives and farmers, and that's what they are. So the water dowsers look like they're farmers. They're just guys from the country, except everybody knows if you want to drill a well, you call this particular man and he will tell you the exact location and exactly how much water you will find at what depth. Because he's really good at what he does. That's his particular gift. And there's this wide range of people, and they just, I sit at, the best part of it for me is sitting at lunch and dinner and whenever else with a bunch of people that I probably don't know. And we start a conversation, and there'll be an offhanded remark where they say, well, I do what I always do. I did this. So wait a minute, back it up to the beginning and tell me how you do that, because you just gave me a piece to a puzzle that's been missing for a long time, and I want to know how you do that. And that's really what all this stuff is about. Every one of the people there has something that they've learned in depth and mastered, and all the rest of us keep filling in pieces to the puzzle. So that we each know more and can do more and can understand more. And it's a whole lot of fun for me. And I haven't seen these folks for almost 3 years, so I'm very excited about going to the Swingers Convention. So if you haven't heard of it before, you can get more information at dowsers.org. If you would like to learn more about dowsing, there is a document which used to be at lettertorobin.com or .org, and it was a master dowser writing down how to do dowsing for a teenager. And there's a link to that from dowsers.org. Interesting stuff. Anybody can do it. It's not particularly complicated. It's not particularly mystical. You may be amazed that it works if you, in quotation marks, don't believe in this stuff, but it works. And it has worked for thousands of years. So that's tonight's metaphysical music. And now we get to have a great deal of fun with my guest, Denise Minger. Thank you so much for being on the show, Denise.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, and I want to tell, you know, it's another one of these, how in the world did you run into these people, like the dowser story? I don't know that I even told you this. I found you because I had a link to your publisher's website.
I did not know that.
And I'm flipping through the authors, looking at, you know, what topics and what's going on. And you're a striking looking person. And you, the first paragraph about your book was fascinating. And I started checking out information about what you did. And the more I did that, the more I realized that you were witty and funny and loved to banter. And even your contact page was full of wisecracks. And I said, oh, I gotta, if I ever talk to this gal, we're going to have fun.
And we have the same birthday.
And we have the same birthday.
Yes, very important.
Exactly. So you are an expert in one field, but you also have a fascination with the stuff that I'm involved with. So I'm guessing that there's what we always start out with is, you know, what was your walkabout? How did you get here? What were the challenges? And I'm guessing that there is kind of a two-themed walkabout here because you had both of them going on. One is your interest in and expertise in nutrition, which, and you have a fascinating point of view on it, and I want to hear more. It's, you know, you, and the other thing is you're interested in spirituality and the paranormal and metaphysics. How cool is that?
This is actually a great place to be able to talk about this too, because so often you have the spiritual community and the scientific community at odds with each other. And I always have trouble finding a home for myself in these different fields because I believe in a lot of things that directly contradict the whole materialism perspective that the scientific community tends to embrace. But at the same time, often within the spiritual community, there's a lot of, I guess, lack of quality control. You know, there's a lot of pounds in. And so, you know,
I like that.
Trying to phrase it gently, but, you know, so you have these two competing fields that are both trying to understand existence, and they're doing it from different perspectives, both of which I find very valuable. But at the same time, they often either, you know, are butting heads with each other, or it's just very difficult to reconcile these two places. And so, you know, I'm parked over in the nutrition community for the most part, but in my private time, I am completely interested in anything metaphysical, occult, basically anything that requires a lot of digging and research and touching upon these great mysteries of life, because that's kind of what my passion is. I love researching regardless what it is. So this is really cool. I had no idea when you contacted me, what your show was about. And I was like, yeah, I'll do a podcast. And I was on your page looking at everything. And I was like, oh yes, it's gold mine. So thanks again for inviting me on, because I don't usually get to talk about this kind of thing.
And, you know, I'm glad that I can create that place for you. And one of the things is I think you're going to be on more than once because there's way too much to talk about.
Already looking forward to it. Thank you.
Exactly. So you gave me just a couple of sentences about your background, but how did you wind up, first of all, getting involved in nutrition, and how did that relate to your interest in the occult and the paranormal and metaphysics?
Sure. So when I was, 7 years old, I almost choked on a piece of steak. I was just eating it for dinner and I don't know what happened, but suddenly I couldn't breathe and I freaked out and I went vegetarian after that because I just developed like an instant meat phobia. So that was the first time in my life where I had to actually think about what I was eating. And, you know, 7 years old, that's pretty young.
Yeah.
So I was vegetarian for a decade. When I was 11, I got super sick for a year, I don't even remember fifth grade because I was so ill the entire time. And the doctors thought maybe I had a flu that wouldn't go away, or that I had tonsil problems or adenoid problems. I had my adenoids taken out just kind of experimentally because the doctors didn't know what was wrong. Totally useless surgery that my parents had to pay for. They put me on Claritin, antibiotics, all sorts of allergy stuff, and nothing worked. And I finally went to a naturopathic doctor who took one look at me, saw these circles under my eyes, and she's like, girl, you have a food allergy. And so she put me on an elimination diet where I think I had to eat like rice and green beans for like a week and then, you know, add back foods one at a time.
Right.
And upon adding back pizza, I discovered I was very much allergic to wheat, unfortunately, because I loved everything that was a noodle or a piece of bread. So I had to go wheat free and meat free age 11. A couple years later, also developed an allergy to dairy and soy. And so I had to cut those out of my diet. And at that point, I was left with basically fruits and vegetables and nuts being some of the only things that I could eat. So at the time, I really liked the internet, as I think all teenagers do. And so I was, exploring one day, looking up, I don't know, Radiohead songs to download illegally. And I ended up on... Shh, don't tell. So I ended up on...
Nobody will hear us, right?
Nobody. Nobody's going to listen to this. I plead innocence. So I ended up somehow on this website for a guy who's advocating something called the 80-10-10 diet. A guy named Douglas Graham. He was a chiropractor, but had that doctor initial in front of his name, which in my mind at the time was like, okay, I can trust this person. And he had this forum on vegsource.com, which is a huge vegetarian website. And I started browsing it one day, and I don't know, it clicked for me, this idea that no other animal cooks their food and no other animal has these plagues of diseases like humankind does. And I was listening to all these armchair anthropologists on the internet who think they know everything about, you know, biology and evolution and all that. And they're saying, yeah, you know, humans are not adapted to eat meat. We're not adapted to eat cooked food. We should be eating a diet of raw fruits, vegetables, and a little bit of nuts and seeds, you know, resembling what the chimpanzees eat, because they're our closest genetic relative. And so at the time, I had very little science background beyond, I guess, I was a freshman in high school. And I fell for it. I thought, wow, that actually kind of makes sense. That makes logical sense. And I've never had a very good immune system. I was always very sick growing up. So this idea of finding a way to eat that would really heal your body and empower you to live a great life was incredibly seductive. So when I was, I guess I was 15 at this time, I went pretty much raw vegan overnight, cold turkey, stopped eating any kind of cooked food, and lived on a diet of about 20 to 30 bananas a day, or the equivalent of other fruits, along with about 2 heads of romaine lettuce a day and occasional almonds. And I ate this way for an entire year. And looking back on it, definitely not my best choice in life. At the time, it made sense to me, but for 2 months, I felt fantastic, you know, because I just had gotten rid of all the processed food in my diet.
Right.
But at the end of the year, my hair had been falling out. I had just these horrible dark circles under my eyes. I weighed, I think, between 90 and 95 pounds, and I'm 5'5". And I had absolutely no muscle mass. My memory was that of like an 80-year-old Alzheimer's patient. I don't know. It was horrible. I couldn't, like, I literally couldn't come up with words as I was speaking. And it was just really bad. And at that time, my parents, of course, were very concerned. And so they dragged me to the doctor. I had B12 deficiency, iron deficiency, anemia, thyroid issues were going on. And the big kicker for me was when I went to the dentist after that year. And I was one of those people who was totally cocky about their brushing and flossing habits. Like, I was the girl who could not go to a sleepover and fall asleep without brushing my teeth. Like, I was not that person. The other kids would eat their candy and then pass out. And I'd just be like sitting in bed, like, oh my God, when can I get to the bathroom to brush my teeth? When can they fall asleep so I can sneak off to floss? And, so my teeth were in great shape for most of my life. And after that 1 year as a raw vegan, I ended up with 16 cavities developed in 1 year. And for me, that was kind of the wake up call. I was like, well, I don't want to have dentures by the time I'm 30. And that's what the dentist was telling me. They're like, if this doesn't get fixed, then you're going to end up in that shape. You're going to actually need teeth pulled. So that was the beginning of my recovery journey, which was kind of dovetailing with this whole nutrition research thing. And I realized at that point, I really couldn't trust anybody on the internet, especially not people who are chiropractors using their doctor initials to gain authority. And I kind of switched from this naive, I don't know if I was really naive, but I was very trusting at the time. And I switched from that perspective to one of, I really can't trust anyone but myself. I don't want to call it like super paranoid, but I kind of became on the offensive in terms of, I got to do my own research. So started reading, looking at other non-vegan, non-vegetarian sources of information. Cause you know, for so much of my life, that's where my information came from. It was from those meat-free communities, which of course have their own biases. And, I eventually came to the conclusion that I needed to add some animal foods back to my diet after so long as a vegetarian. And the first time I ate any kind of flesh food in 10 years was 17 years old at the time. And I was in college, and it was like the end of the year. We were having a potluck, and someone had brought a plate of sushi and sashimi to class. So, like, I made this awesome melon bird with like watermelon balls, and just it was awesome. But, you know, I was looking at my watermelon bird, and I was looking at this plate of sushi, and I was just like staring at the fish thinking, yeah, that's fish. That's fish right there. And before I knew it, my hand was grabbing like fistfuls of salmon, raw salmon, and I was shoveling them into my mouth like a savage. And it was a completely instinctual, non-thinking thing. It was just like the food was in my mouth. And it was the first time in years that I felt satisfied. It was amazing. Like mm-hmm. that fish, it was just like magic fish. It was great. And so at that point I realized, okay, my body needs something in this food. And that was the end of me being a vegetarian. So, yep. And the beginning of me being a sushi lover. So, yeah. So that was just the beginning of like this realization that I really wanted to learn about food and its effects on my body. And I felt like I couldn't trust other people. So I wanted to be the principal researcher in my life. And it wasn't until I was 20 or 21 when I started blogging. And I'll actually go back to the whole metaphysical thing now, because that's where my blogging started. So put that whole story on hold for a second and back up to my childhood again. I've always been very scientifically minded. I've always loved math and sciences as well as the arts. And my mom was a scientist. She's an avian scientist. She studied that kind of thing when she was in graduate school. And my dad was just super scientific minded, incredible genius, brilliant man. And so I was fed a lot of skepticism when I was growing up. But at the same time, my family was very open to the idea of consciousness persisting outside of the body, you know, life after death. My dad had tons of ghost sightings and all sorts of paranormal things happened to him when he was growing up. And in fact, he had spent a large part of his 20s experiencing astral travel and out of body experiences that happened spontaneously. And, you know, this was back in the 1970s, and he didn't have Google where he could go type what he was, you know, right. You know, what does it mean when I am floating outside my body? No, he didn't have those resources. So he spent a lot of his own time trying to search for answers to the experiences he was having. And so that made him a very, I guess, well-rounded person, in the sense that he had a lot of diverse experiences and maintained a level head about them, but it was also very open to these other parts of reality that are not maybe normally accepted. And so when I was growing up, as I was telling you a little bit before our show, I didn't get the life advice like, you know, this is what you should do about boys, and this is how you, you know, or this is how you drive a stick shift. I didn't get that stuff. I got, hey, Denise, this is what you do if you wake up and you find yourself in a lower astral realm. That's my dad, who's, you know, telling me stuff like that. Like, and I thought it was great. I loved it. I loved learning about that kind of thing, because I don't even know when my own interest started, but I remember being, you know, 6 years old, sitting in front of an encyclopedia I couldn't read yet, trying to move the pages with my mind. And of course it never worked, but that was, you know, that was the kind of thing I was interested in. I used to spend all my allowance money on numerology books and palm reading and astrology. And in fact, my first nerdy statistical project that I ever did was compiling people's birth information who are in long-term relationships and looking for statistical correlations between their birth charts and astrology. And I actually found stuff. Yeah, it was, I mean, I was like 16, 17 doing this. And it was just because I was a nerd. I loved doing that kind of stuff. But the stuff I found there was often as robust as many of the findings we get excited over in the nutrition field. And yet that kind of thing is so unaccepted that if you even bring that up, it's just pseudoscience, you know, it's woo, it's unscientific. And so I usually keep that part of my life a little more private, just because I don't want to tarnish my already difficult reputation as a nutrition worker who has an English degree and is 27 years old. So, but yeah, you know, anyway, so I'm totally getting off tangent here, but anyway, okay. So yeah, so I love
the, hold
yeah,
the go thought.
Ahead. Okay.
Hold the thought, because we're going to go to a break.
Okay.
I want to make sure that people know your website.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Rawfoodsos.com.
Fantastic. Rawfoodsos.com. My guest tonight is Denise Minger, and we're going to have more fun with her in just a few minutes after our
various messages. We will be back shortly unless we get taller. Don't go nowhere.
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. And we're back with my guest, Denise Minger, who was just starting to really tell us about her struggle with being so smart and so knowledgeable about nutrition in a world of people who have not done their homework. Is that about summing up?
I think that's perfect.
Well, let me tell you my vegetarian story.
Please.
Because I'm a staunch meat eater at this point, not that I eat an incredible amount. When I was my early 30s, I got depressed for various reasons we don't need to go into. And there's a saying in psychiatry that if you feel depressed and you're eating a lot, it's anxiety. But if you're feeling depressed and you can't eat, that's depression. So I obviously was depressed because I couldn't eat much. And that was scary. And I started doing my homework. and realized that probably the best thing for me to do was to go on a vegetarian diet. And so not quite overnight, I wound up being on the typical, you know, brown rice, veggies and tofu kind of vegetarian diet. Decades later, we now know that tofu is bad for men, but who knew then? And so I was a vegetarian for 5 years. And it was extremely cleansing, and I did various cleansing routines as well, and cleaned out a lot of toxicity from growing up in a household where everybody smoked and, you know, all kinds of things. In the course of this, I also wound up on my walkabout spending a couple of years apprenticing with two shamans. Hmm. And at a certain point, everybody started saying, you need to eat meat. Because you are just so yin that you can't stay grounded. You're doing all the spiritual stuff. You're out of your body a lot. You need that warrior energy, that meat energy, to make that difference. And I go, no, I'm not, I don't do that. Very long story for another time. I had an opportunity after I left California and that experience to go to Haiti for several months and do medical missionary work. And the families that would invite us for dinner had spent the entire day preparing dinner. So if they made a chicken dinner, that chicken was alive that morning.
Wow.
It was, you know, to them an everyday thing, but to me, it was just an amazing look at how the world used to be, and a labor of love. So it was either chicken or goat, and you didn't say no. This was a gift. And it took, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 weeks for my body to accommodate to processing meat again. You know, I didn't have enough stomach acid or whatever the enzyme issue was. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I decided I would never not eat meat at all so that I could avoid that transition process. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I realized that a lot of what I eat is a lot like what vegetarians eat, except I also eat meat.
Yeah.
And, you know, I eat the meat and I also eat healthy with all these other very vegetable-based things, but especially with the work I do, I really need the grounding of the meat.
Right.
And, you know, with the eat for your type diet, I'm supposed to be a vegetarian, and I'm like, yeah, well, you don't know what I'm doing.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm like, no, that's not right. It's just not right for me. So, so I come to the conversation having stumbled around before there was a lot of information and been a vegetarian and done it in a not very conscious way because I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And then moving in a direction back towards including meat in my diet because it obviously is something that I need.
Mm. Wow.
I can't believe that I said something that made you quiet.
Actually, well, I'm just connecting a bunch of dots because a lot of people in the raw vegan community, you know, there's a very strong dovetail with that community and spirituality. And a lot of people are actually trying to eat their way to enlightenment through cleansing, through the detoxes, through living on nothing but fruit, you know, trying to transition to being breatharians, living on nothing but air. And there is a very strong lack of groundedness within that community on a lot of different levels. So I just find it really interesting that that was your experience too, when you're trying to pursue those, you know, maybe being disconnected from your body more and needing something to ground you. I think that's probably a really common experience.
It's a very common experience in the spiritual community, and you can't have the conversation because there are so many other layers of belief that come in front of having a conversation about how the food's affecting you.
Right.
So, you know, it winds up being a heresy to even say that maybe you should be eating meat.
Exactly. Oh, I got banned from forums when after I unveganized, after I became a meat eater again, I used to go on forums where there were a bunch of raw vegans and people who were having the same kind of problems I had with weight loss, hair falling out, teeth problems. And I would often message them privately or post on the forum something very gentle about, this is what I did. I went through the same thing and I had to actually add back some animal products. First thing that would happen is I would log back in a few minutes later and I would find myself banned from the website. And it was like that conversation that you just couldn't have it. It was censored immediately.
Right. The other layer to all of it is the issues of how animals are treated and not wanting to eat anything with a face is the way it's put a lot of the time.
Exactly.
Which I totally understand and support. You know, the factory farming is hideous. On the other hand, if you really understand that everything is conscious, the joke is that a vegetarian is someone who can't hear a carrot scream. You know, on this planet, to be alive, everybody eats somebody else.
Right.
It just is the flow of nature on this planet. And I totally agree and sympathize with the underlying idea that we should treat animals well. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, that's not a really good way to choose what you're eating. And if you're really talking about consciousness, you need to talk to the rest of your food too and thank it and apologize, which is what, you know, the remnant of that is grace. But, you know, it's really thank all of you for keeping me alive and for your part in making it possible for me to have this lifetime.
Right. And not only that too, there's a lot of if you talk to vegans who have, gone through their own arguments and tried to rationalize everything that they can and can't eat. There's also that problem of just to harvest any kind of plant matter, you know, giant fields of stuff. Wheat thrashers kill dozens, if not hundreds, of small mammals every time they plow through a wheat field. Right. So is that piece of bread on your plate, even though you don't see the blood on it, it's still the process that it took to get from the farm to your mouth. It involved a lot of bloodshed, a lot of death. And you're right. It's impossible to escape that cycle. And it's not necessarily something we would want to escape. I think it's a part of the universe that is beautiful in many ways. It just depends on kind of how you're treating the creatures that are here and the consciousness that's here.
And the consciousness that you bring to it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, when whatever meat I eat, I say thank you. And I also say I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I know that we are not in a place where animals are being treated as we should be treating you. And I really appreciate that you keep me alive. And I'm sorry you had to go through that. So that the consciousness, you know, and we can, there's another piece to it, which in terms of the consciousness of animals, people are used to animals that are pets. Mm-hmm. And the consciousness of an animal that is a pet is different from a herd animal because of the relationship with the human being.
Yeah.
In effect, the personality that you experience comes out of the relationship with human beings. Otherwise, they're part of a herd. And there's a leader of the herd, but the herd does things together. There is not that sense of there being all these individuals with individual personalities. The world wouldn't work if it was that way. So, again, the conversation is not with Bossy, the cow that you see over the fence in the petting zoo. It's with all cows. Mm-hmm. It's with the consciousness of all cows in the herd. And, you know, if we were hunting society the way indigenous cultures are, they do ceremony before they go out and they ask for an animal to sacrifice itself so that the tribe can live. Hmm. And the stories are always told that the animal will arrive and stand still and look them in the eye. And they will say thank you before they kill it.
Wow.
And that's a totally different way of being in relationship with the world, with food, with everything else. And we've really completely lost it. But we can take our little piece of it and say, okay, all of this history that screwed this up is still here, but, you know, thank you and I'll do what I can. Yeah. And let's see how the world will change in the next few decades, hundreds of years, as the ascension of energy happens on the planet. So that was that sidetrack there, but
no, that's beautiful. Yeah, I do think things are changing in that direction. I think with the emergence of kind of like the real food movement and different paleo movements, there's definitely this emphasis on treating our animals better and kind of reestablishing that relationship where it's not just us having prisoners in these giant battery cages where their life is misery, but letting them, you know, live their actual lives before we consume them. Yeah, I think it's moving
right.
There.
And the problem with it is, how do you feed as many people as we need to feed?
Yeah.
Without coming up with a way that is, in very big air quotes, efficient.
Right.
To manage lots and lots of, whether it's wheat or corn or animals or anything else. If you got to do a lot of it, you have to figure out how to do it with a lot of it.
Yep.
So, yes. And, you know, I live in New England. There are a lot of small farms here. It's wonderful. You can get things that have been done locally, organically, and on small farms, and cost almost twice as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it has to. I understand it. So you have to pick and choose which of those things you can include in your diet and which you just, you know, you can't afford.
Yep.
So much more complicated than just what are the best foods to consume. But I'm always fascinated with the directions that people will take, the politics and the spiritual politics.
Oh, yeah.
To avoid having to really think about it. Because it's always easier to have an orthodoxy that you can attach yourself to that other people agree with. Mm-hmm. And then you're part of the group and everyone shakes their head up and down and goes, yes, this is true. And all you people out there are wrong.
Yes. That basically defines every nutrition movement out there right now.
Right. Big Which is it's the same as politics and religion. It's just you come up with a different focus rather than the ones that are more traditional.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are, two heretics.
Yep.
Well, and interestingly enough, I recently found out what the word heretic means.
Mm-hmm.
Heresy means choice.
Does it?
Orthodoxy means straight. It means doing things the way you are told to do it, the way the religion says it is. A heresy is someone who chooses to look at it differently or does something different.
Wow.
How's that for?
Oh, I love that. I love word origins. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So as one medicine man in a circle I was privileged to sit and listen at said, I am a born again heretic.
I might have to steal that.
Absolutely. Nice. He'd be proud.
Nice.
So, you know, it's what I hear you talking about, and I'm looking at the clock and going, oh, we haven't even started here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely going to keep this going.
Yeah.
You're taking a very in-depth look at the science, but it started from a very personal experience where you thought you were doing everything right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when that attempt to do it right failed, instead of doing what most of the people in an orthodoxy about whatever the nutrition is would do, which is do more of what's not working. because it's what you're supposed to do. It's supposed to work.
Right.
Instead, you started researching it, looking at it, experimenting with it, and coming up to your own conclusions with it. So in other words, you're a hacker.
Yes. I'll take it. Yeah. Yeah. Well
and yeah. I say that in the best way, because, you know, if you go further back, hackers weren't called hackers. They were called tinkers. It was, you know, the person who, or artists, you know, the people who had a mastery of something and then said, well, what can I do with it? How can I make things better? What could be done differently? If I tweak this, if I turn that, if I do, you know, and we know some of them as being the great inventors, you know, because they did something that affected lots of people and made a lot of money, or at least got notoriety for it. But there are people out there in every field who are the hackers, who are just looking at things constantly and going, oh, wait a minute, maybe we should. And then they try it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, essentially the hackers have kept the human race alive.
Yeah, they have, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, happy to be among their company.
Absolutely. So we have not a whole lot of time left. But we'll do this again. If you were going to summarize where you've come to with an approach to nutrition, you know, 25 words or less in a box stop, and you're probably too young to know what that reference is. Tell you later.
All right.
You know, when you need to do your elevator speech or your quick conversation about how you look at all this stuff now and what you think people need to be considering or doing differently, what do you say?
So before I get to my short 25 word part, I'll just preface this with kind of saying, I think, first of all, it's important to look at what has worked in history for humans, because right now we have this weird place in nutritional science where we're looking at foods in terms of being a collection of little nutrients, and we're trying to, you know, get small. We're looking at the pixels, trying to figure out the huge picture. But when we get to the fine points, it's like the whole cohesiveness of food falls apart because things are interconnected in a way that we don't understand yet. Right. So I think science, like this nitty gritty detail oriented science, is great in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it does us a disservice when we're trying to figure out what we should put in our bodies right now. So I like to look at the work of people like Weston A. Price, who was a dentist who traveled the world in the 1920s, looking at these isolated populations who are still eating the diets they'd been eating for hundreds of years.
Right.
And basically they accumulated wisdom about what kinds of foods would produce healthy babies, keep old people alive, prevent illness, so on and so forth. And so I find that very interesting, because you can see areas of overlap where people eating very different diets still had some things in common. And those key overlap areas, like the center of the Venn diagram, seems to be kind of critical in terms of how we can apply food to our diets now. And so those areas of overlap are the things I'd condense into 25 words. And those are basically E-foods that are still looking somewhat like how they looked in nature. You know, don't eat things out of a crinkly aluminum package, because for the most part, that's going to be just processed to the moon and back, and it's not going to be very good for you. But I recommend that people eat nutrient-dense foods from both the plant and animal kingdom, and that includes things like organ meats, egg yolks, high-quality dairy for people who can tolerate it. Shellfish, fish, seafood in general is great. Seaweeds, and then from the plant kingdom, fermented foods are really great. Any kind of darkly, deeply colored vegetable, very nutritious. I'm a big fan of fruit as well. Berries are really high in a lot of great things. And beyond those basics, I just think people should really be careful about avoiding high omega-6 vegetable oils, because if you get my, this is a big part of my book, actually. Those are just bad in a lot of ways that I don't have enough time to explain right now. But for the most part, you know, corn oil, cottonseed oil, soybean oil, those things that are in, again, every processed food, they're really one of the worst things that you can be putting into your body is fuel. And so natural fats are much better. Even natural animal fats like lard and ghee and butter are going to be far superior to these heavily processed vegetable oils. So I say kick the vegetable oils out of your diet, avoid refined grains and sugars, stick with natural in whole form as often as possible. And then beyond that, I really recommend people don't fall into dogma. I think this is an important kind of caveat to tack on to any kind of diet recommendation, which is that whatever's working for you today might not be working for you again tomorrow. Right. So just be flexible and open to change, open to what comes, open to shifts in your own body, and never close your mind so tightly around a single idea that you cannot break free from it if you need to. So I think that's a biggie.
Excellent advice for everything in life.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, that people will tend to do what they've always done and what they've been told is the right thing.
Right. Yeah.
And you can't see outside of the box, which is that whole thing about inside the box, outside the box, to which my response is box. There's a box. What is this box you speak of? but, you know, there are as many boxes as there are orthodoxies. And, you know, as soon as people get into a group and agree with each other, there's a box.
Right. Yeah. And, so I think it's helpful too for people. Like, this is what I do. I always read, no matter what I believe in, I try to read material from people who believe the exact opposite. And my strategy is, if I cannot refute what they're saying with my own facts or my own research, then I might need to open my mind a little bit bigger and allow some of their ideas in, because maybe I'm wrong. And so I recommend people, if especially, you know, we're talking about diet right now, so I'll use that as an example. But if you're somebody who's eating like a paleo diet, you know, go to like the plant-based diet websites and read about that material, and just expose yourself to all the different ideas instead of letting yourself stagnate within a certain community, because that's when it really does get toxic and it gets harder and harder to pry yourself away.
Yep. It's tricky, and you're very good at explaining it.
Thank you.
And hopefully, you know, there will be a wider and wider range of people that are willing to listen. However, do not dismay. Things have been this way for a very, very long time.
Yes, they have.
The problem with being a way shower is most people are still looking the other way.
Yes.
So there just isn't enough time to do this in one session. You're just going to have to come back.
Okay. I'll tell you my story about how I started my blog and got hit by a car.
I thought that was in there somewhere. So you have to at least come back and tell us the car story.
Will do.
So my guest tonight is Denise Minger, expert on many things and just a lot of fun. Her website is, tell us again,
rawfoodsos.com.
And so check out what she has there, and be on the lookout for this gal. She's going to do some very interesting things. And we will have her back. So if along the way you have gotten at all curious about this strange man, David, and whatever he does, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my online scheduling calendar. You can set up a 20-minute free consultation with me to assess what's going on in your situation with a person, a place, situation, court cases, everything possible we can probably affect. Give me a call. Go to the website and schedule an appointment. If you're looking for more details about the show or the archives, or you want to listen to this show and previous shows, go to thefarkasfiles.com. You can also find us on iTunes podcasts, iHeartRadio, and a whole bunch of other places. Just look under the talk radio listings for Empower Radio. So once again, what a great conversation. Mm-hmm. And we will be back next week. So have a fantastic week. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a great week.